Luther was up and down. His secretary, a 50-year-old triple divorcee named Docs, had quipped that she'd have to buy her own cheap perfume, she supposed, since Santa wasn't coming this year. He'd been called Scrooge twice, and each time the name had been followed by a fit of laughter. How original, Luther thought. Late in the morning, Yank Slater darted into Luther's office as if angry clients were chasing him. Peeking out first, he closed the door, then assumed a seat. "You're a genius, old boy," he said almost in a whisper. Yank was an amortization specialist, afraid of a shadow, loved 18-hour days because his wife was a brawler. "Of course I am," said Luther. "I went home last night late, got the wife to bed, then did the same thing you did. I crunched the numbers, went through the bank statements, the works, came up with almost $7,000. What was your damage?" "Just over $6,000. "Unbelievable, and not a rotten thing to show for it. Makes me sick." "Take a cruise," Luther said, knowing full well that Yank's wife would never agree to such foolishness. For her, the holidays began in late October and steadily gathered momentum until the Big Bang, a 10-hour marathon on Christmas Day with four meals and a packed house. "Take a cruise," Yank mumbled. "I can't think of anything worse. Socked away on a boat with Abigail for 10 days, I'd pitch her overboard." "And no one would blame you," Luther thought. $7,000, Yank repeated to himself. "Ridiculous, isn't it?" Luther said, and for a moment both accountants silently lamented the waste of hard-earned money. "Your first cruise?" Yank asked.
"Yes."
"Never done one myself. Wonder if they have single folks on board." "I'm sure they do. There's no requirement you have to take a partner." "Thinking of going solo, Yank?" "Not thinking, Luther, dreaming." He drifted off, his hollow eyes showing a hint of hope, of fun, of something Luther had never seen before in Yank. He left the room there for a moment, his thoughts running wildly across the Caribbean, so wonderfully alone without Abigail. Luther was quiet while his colleague dreamed, but the dream soon became slightly embarrassing. Fortunately, the phone rang, and Yank was jolted back to a harsh world of amortization tables and a quarrelsome wife. He got to his feet and seemed to be leaving without a word. At the door, though, he said, "You're my hero, Luther." Vic Frohmeyer had heard the rumor from Mr. Scanlon, the scoutmaster, and from his wife's niece, who roomed with a girl who worked part-time for Aubie at the pumpkin seed, and from a colleague at the university whose brother got his taxes done by someone at Wiley and Beck. Three different sources, and the rumor had to be true. Crank could do whatever he damn well pleased, but Vic and the rest of Hemlock wouldn't take it lying down. Frohmeyer was the unelected ward boss of Hemlock. His cushy job at the university gave him time to meddle, and his boundless energy kept him on the street organizing all sorts of activities. With six kids, his house was the undisputed hangout. The doors were always open, a game always in progress. As a result, his lawn had a worn look to it, though he worked hard in his flower beds. It was Frohmeyer who brought the candidates to Hemlock for barbecues in his backyard and for their campaign pledges. It was Frohmeyer who circulated the petitions, knocking door to door, gathering momentum against annexation or in favor of school bonds or against a new four-lane miles away or in favor of a new sewer system. It was Frohmeyer who called sanitation when a neighbor's garbage was not picked up, and because it was Frohmeyer, the matter got quickly resolved. A stray dog, one from another street, a call from Vic Frohmeyer, and animal control was on the spot. A stray kid, one with hair and tattoos and the leery look of a delinquent, and Frohmeyer would have the police poking him in the chest and asking questions. A hospital stay on Hemlock, and the Frohmeyers arranged visitation and food and even lawn care. A death on Hemlock, and they organized flowers for the funeral and visits to the cemetery. A neighbor in need could call the Frohmeyers for anything. The Frosties had been Vic's idea, though he'd seen it in a suburb of Evanston and thus couldn't take full credit. The same Frosty on every Hemlock roof, an 8-foot Frosty with a goofy smile around a corncob pipe and a blacktop hat and thick rolls around the middle, all made to glow a brilliant white by a 200-watt bulb screwed into a cavity somewhere near Frosty's colon. The Hemlock Frosties had made their debut 6 years earlier and were a smashing success. 21 houses on one side, 21 on the other, the street lined with two perfect rows of Frosties 40 feet up. A color photo with a cute story ran on the front page. Two television news crews had done live reports. The next year, Stanton Street to the south and Ackerman Street to the north had jumped in with Rudolphs and Silver Bells, respectively, and a committee from Parks and Rec, at Frohmeyer's quiet urging, began giving neighborhood awards for Christmas decorations. 2 years earlier, disaster struck when a windstorm sent most of the Frosties airborne into the next precinct. Frohmeyer rallied the neighbors, though, and last year a new, slightly shorter version of Frosty decorated Hemlock. Only two houses had not participated. Each year, Frohmeyer decided the date on which to resurrect the Frosties, and after hearing the rumors about Crank and his crews, he decided to do it immediately. After dinner, he typed a short memo to his neighbors, something he did at least twice a month, ran 41 copies, and dispatched his six children to hand-deliver them to every house on Hemlock. It read, "Neighbor, weather tomorrow should be clear, an excellent time to bring Frosty back to life. Call Marty or Judd or myself if you need assistance. Vic Frohmeyer." Luther took the memo from a smiling kid. "Who is it?" Nora called from the kitchen. "Frohmeyer." "What's it about?" "Frosty." She walked slowly into the living room where Luther was holding the half sheet of paper as if it were a summons to jury duty. They gave each other a fearful look, and very slowly Luther began shaking his head. "You have to do it," she said. "No, I do not," he said very firmly, his temper rising with each word. "I certainly do not. I will not be told by Vic Frohmeyer that I have to decorate my house for Christmas." "It's just Frosty." "No, it is much more." "What?" "It's the principle of it, Nora. Don't you understand? We can forget about Christmas if he damn well choose, and..." "Don't swear, Luther." "And no one, not even Vic Frohmeyer, can stop us." Louder. "I will not be forced into doing this." He was pointing to the ceiling with one hand and waving the memo with the other. Nora retreated to the kitchen.